Hello, I'm Christopher Johnson, reporter at CTY Wealth Manager. Today I'm joined by CTY A-rated Richard Dillard, portfolio manager of the £239 million VT Dillard America Fund. The US small cap manager gave his views on how his fund has consistently beaten the S&P 500 over the last 3 years, why Build-A-Bear has been his star holding, whilst also admitting that his assessment of the dominance of the US tech stocks was wrong.
So you mentioned that you don't invest in any of the, you know, big technology companies, and they have actually, well, seven companies have driven the S&P 500 to see kind of the increases that it's had over the last year. Is this sustainable? And why have you chosen to not invest in these tech stocks?
Well, they're very good companies, and I would not expect them to just go down again, but I would expect them to enter into a trading range for some time, because they've gone to ratings which are about the highest they've been on. They've gone back to those high ratings. So I would have thought that's enough. For ourselves, we're not in them because they're too expensive for us. It's as simple as that. I'm not saying I wouldn't on principle, but I think the ratings on them are too high. And this year I've been wrong, because they've been the best place to be. Over the last 10 years I've been on ballot. If we look at the last years since the fund was launched in 2010, I've been wrong. I've been wrong for, I think, probably 11 or 12 of those 13 years. I've been wrong. The big tech have done better than I would have expected. But we're not therefore going to change and come rushing in now. I still don't think they're right. It's not because I'm obstinate. It's because when I set up the fund, I think we talked about it before. It was to be in the best place, which longer term. If we look at the long-term data, the 100-year data, it's still better to be in cheaper stocks, in smaller stocks. But the world has had an experience with lower interest rates, which has driven these big companies to higher and higher multiples. I mean, if we take the most loved stock of all now, Apple, and we look at the rating it's on, then it's extraordinary to me, just the price earnings multiple against its growth rate. It would seem to me there's not much more to go for on the upside.
I really do appreciate the candor of you saying, you know, we were wrong, and that's not something that many kind of investors like to do. But you said that you wouldn't dive into these stocks now, despite admitting that you were wrong. But 10 years ago, you could have done it. So what stopped you? Was it still the valuations being too high? What made you not bet on these stocks and dive in previously?
First of all, they weren't the same stocks. Secondly, what I didn't foresee was that interest rates would continue on down for another 10 years, and that's what drove the multiples higher. So it's not so much that I didn't see the growth of the stocks. I didn't see the re-rating that was driven by the interest rates. And finally, what we do works in that we've beaten the S&P 500 over that time. So in a way, I don't have to be yanked out of my comfort zone and go into these difficult stocks, because they are difficult, because they change. You know, what is popular now won't be popular in the future, because of the creative destruction of this industry. It means that you've got to be on it the whole time, and changing these stocks. Otherwise, you just get left behind. And we see an easy example of that in that we talk about these seven stocks going to high levels, but if you look at the funds which were the best winners in the run-up to the technology top in November 2021, they're not participating now, to which I refer to stocks like ARK in America, and maybe Baillie Gifford in this country. Those funds are not making new highs because what was the best things back then has changed. And in order to be really hot today, you'd have to be in something like an AI fund, which doesn't really exist yet. And there's nobody. Another problem that people face when we talk about the Magnificent Seven is that no fund is able to reach their weighting. So, for instance, if you were a balanced fund and you say, oh, well, look at our fund, our biggest holding is Apple, we've got 6% in Apple. Well, therefore, you want Apple to go down because the Apple weighting is 7.2%, so you're underweight and it's a drag. So if Apple goes up, you're going to underperform. And we see that. We see that in the way the fund, if you look at all the funds invested in North America, in this country, they have been lagging the S&P 500 this year.
And what are your views on kind of AI and how it's kind of pushed, you know, valuations up? I've seen, I've spoken to some fund managers who are quite skeptical about kind of the exuberance with investors and AI and this obviously new phenomena that's coming out. So what would you say to that? Are you excited? Do you think these valuations are it's worth driving them up, or are you skeptical yourself?
I'm not a skeptic. I think it's amazing. It reminds me of when the internet started. I'd say I was scared myself. We've made one AI investment, which I did fairly immediately, which is we bought the tractor company, John Deere, because I heard on their earnings call that they were busy hiring all the people in California that had been laid off last year by Amazon and Meta, and telling them that they had a better life in Iowa, where they could automate farming. And that's what I heard, that farming is going to get a lot more automated. The rest of the people on the call heard that the farming cycle is not quite right for buying tractors because the crop prices are low, and people are worried of economic slowdown, which is another reason to put off buying a tractor. And so the stock didn't do so well. But I heard that for the longer term. I started imagining that the farmer could be sitting in a cafe in New York and sending his tractor out in Iowa.
And you touched on the fact that the fund has outperformed the S&P 500. So what has been the key to the fund's success? I mean, you haven't invested in the tech stocks and so forth, but your fund is doing considerably well. So what has been the driving force behind that?
At the moment, we're doing very well in housing, because housing has been a counterintuitive area where everyone thought that with interest rates rising, with recession coming, house prices were going to go down. It was going to be terrible for builders in America. And actually, it's been the opposite. And understanding that has helped us be in a sector that people didn't like. And we've got housing stocks that have done better than the big seven this year. We've had stocks which have more than doubled. And this is in an industry where earnings are declining. And the reason for that is an understanding that in America, they have 30-year fixed mortgages. So everyone fixes their mortgages for 30 years. So in a few years ago, when interest rates were at their lowest, they were getting mortgages below 3% for 30 years. And what that meant, as interest rates go up and they've now reset, so if you go into and say you want a 30-year mortgage now, it's at 7%. So you've now got your 30-year mortgage, you're in your home, and you want to move. But if you move, you're going to be paying 7%. What do? You don't sell it. You think about sitting in it for 30 years. What happened next? The people that did want a new home had to go to the builders because there wasn't the supply of existing homes, because that supply was withheld from the market. So even though you had declining house prices, you had a building boom, because everyone was saying, well, I think I'll just stay here another, 28 years or so, because, and there's an affordability thing as well. I mean, they just couldn't say, well, I'm going to step up from 3% to 7%. So let's forget it. Let's borrow a bit more money and build an extension on, but we're not moving. So new build has been doing very well, even in a declining market. And that's a feature of the American market. It's why they don't have the same troubles that we do in this country, where you have where mortgages are shorter and there's great squeeze on people because the short-term mortgages keep on resetting higher, and 2-year mortgages or 5-year mortgages in this country, they expire, people have to remortgage at higher rates, they get squeezed. The Americans are in a better position.
What stocks specifically in the housing sector have you bought?
We've got a stock called Builders First Source, which is a builders merchant. When we bought it, it was on a PE of 5. Its earnings have come through better than Home Depot, which is a builders merchant for the public. So it's like our B&Q. So that's Home Depot. That was on 34 times. We had one on 5 times. We bought it at 16. This year it's gone from 65 to 133. It's 2.8% of the fund. We bought it just 5 years ago at 16. It's now on 13 times. It's growing faster than Home Depot because it's selling to the intermediaries, selling to the builders, the same sort of things, is a better deal than selling to the public, which are more squeezed by recession. And yet it's on 13 times against Home Depot, which is on 17 times. I could see those PEs crossing over. So we're still holding on. So you didn't ask me about the bears, Chris. That's been the single biggest contributor in the last three years. You asked me what I've driven the fund in the last 3 years. Build-A-Bear.
Really?
We made more money in Build-A-Bear than anything else.
Well, why is that, before we go?
Because everyone thought that toy companies were finished. Because when Toys R Us went bankrupt, that was it. All children wanted was something you could buy on Amazon, and that something was an iPad, so it was the end for toy companies. But this company isn't selling toys so much as it's selling experiences. People So we bought it, and we bought it when it was less than $100,000 for a Build-A-Bear shop. If you did it, divided it by market cap, and now there's lots of plans for growth. It's a little growth stock.
Wow. So
even now, we've got a worldwide brand at six times trailing earnings. Now, here's the thing, Chris. You asked me these questions about these big seven and so on. Our Build-A-Bear has got a growth rate that is at least as good as any of the big seven, certainly better than Apple. But for Apple, you'd have to pay, I think, I haven't looked in the last few weeks, but I think it's something like 27 times trailing earnings. Build-A-Bear, you pay 6 times. That's the difference. That's why we are where we are.